night, you travel somewhere new, a place to slow down, to breathe, and to gently let go of the day. There is nothing you need to do, nowhere you need to be. Just listen and allow yourself to drift. Tonight you are going to Switzerland, not in any hurry, not with a list of things to accomplish or a schedule to keep. You are simply going. And the place you are going to is a village, a small, quiet, very old village, tucked into a long green valley between mountains so large that they feel less like geography and more like weather. The village is called Grindelwald, and it is waiting for you. Picture, first, the journey in. You arrive in the late afternoon, when the light has already begun its slow turn toward gold. The train from Interlaken moves quietly through the lower valley, through green fields and small farmsteads, and stands of dark pine. And the further it goes, the closer the mountains come. You are sitting by the window. Your bag is in the rack above you, and your hands are resting in your lap, and the rhythm of the train is gentle and regular, a soft clatter and sway that you have already stopped noticing. The way you stop noticing the sound of your own breathing when you are calm. Outside the window, the land is rising. The fields are steeper now. The farmhouses perched at angles that seem slightly improbable. Their long, low wooden roofs overhanging wide eaves. Their window boxes overflowing with geraniums in red and coral and deep rose pink. Each house sits in its own small world of meadow and woodpile and vegetable garden. The grass, an almost unreasonable shade of green after the afternoon rains. The train rounds a long curve, and there, ahead of you, filling the far end of the valley with a kind of quiet authority, is the Eiger. You have seen photographs. You know it is large, but photographs do not prepare you for the experience of turning a corner and finding a mountain sitting at the end of a valley like a wall placed there by something that had no interest in proportion or restraint. The Eiger's north face is nearly 2 kilometers of dark limestone rising from the valley floor to its summit at just under 4,000 meters, and in the late afternoon light, it is a deep, bruised charcoal grey, with long streaks of pale ice running down its upper ridges. You watch it for a long time. The train does not hurry, neither do you. The village comes quietly. There is no dramatic arrival, no sudden cityscape. Grindelwald simply begins the way villages do, with a scattering of buildings along a road. A church spire, a wooden sign, a cluster of houses set among meadows, and then gradually more buildings, more signs, more geraniums in window boxes, until you're in the middle of it, without having noticed the transition. The station is small and unhurried. You step down from the train and stand on the platform for a moment, breathing in. The air here is something that takes getting used to. It is cooler than you expected, even in summer. It carries the smell of pine and damp stone and something else, something mineral and very faint, a cold breath from glaciers that sit above the tree line, out of sight, but present, exhaling quietly into the valley all day long. You breathe it in. And then again, there is something in mountain air that makes the body want to slow down. Some quality of it, some combination of cold and cleanness and altitude that asks the muscles to soften and the mind to quiet. You feel it already. The hotel is a short walk from the station. You take that walk slowly. traditional Swiss chalet style. Dark timber beams and white render, wide eaves and deep balconies, the newer ones echoing the same shapes in a gentler, simpler way. Every building has its window boxes, every window box has its flowers. And over everything, at the end of the street, at the end of every view you turn toward, the mountains are there. The Eiger to the south, dark and immovable. The Wetterhorn to the east, its rounded summit draped in a cap of pale cloud. The Mönch, and beyond it, the long white sweep of the Jungfrau, glassed and luminous, already lit from some high angle that the valley below has not yet reached. Grindelwald has been receiving visitors for over 150 years. Since the golden age of mountaineering in the 19th century, people have been arriving here, tilting their faces up at these mountains, and finding that whatever it was they were carrying before they came felt somewhat lighter by comparison. You feel that now. The bag behind you feels lighter. Your shoulders feel lower. Your breathing has slowed without you asking it to. The hotel is dark timber and warm light. There is a wooden reception desk and a fire in the corner of the lobby, and the person who checks you in speaks quietly and moves without any urgency, the way people in mountain villages move when they have lived in them long enough to absorb their pace. Your room is on the upper floor. It is not large, but it is perfectly arranged, everything chosen with care. A bed with a thick duvet and high, cool pillows, a wooden writing desk beneath the window, a small armchair in the corner, and a window that opens, and a view. You open the window. The evening air comes in slowly, cool, faintly sweet with pine, carrying the distant sound of a cowbell somewhere far down the slope, hollow and unhurried, the sound of an animal moving through a meadow without any particular destination. You stand at the window for a long time. The mountains are there. They will always be there. That is one of the things that makes mountains restful when you think about it. They are not going anywhere. They are not waiting for you to do anything. They require nothing. They simply stand, and they will be standing long after this evening, and long after many evenings to come. And there is something in that permanence that the body recognizes as permission to rest. You rest your hands on the windowsill. You look at the Eiger. You let your eyes unfocus just slightly, so the mountain becomes less a shape and more a presence, a great dark warmth at the end of the valley, a thing that has been standing here since before the first human ever walked into this valley and looked up and felt exactly what you are feeling now. Small and safe and very still. In the morning you wake slowly. There is no alarm. There is only the light. It comes in through the linen curtains in a way that suggests, rather than insists, a pale gold suffusion that makes a room feel warmer without actually warming it. And you lie in the thick duvet for a long time, not thinking, just feeling the weight of the blanket and the cool of the pillow against your face, and the sound of the valley beginning its quiet day outside. The cowbell sounds again, and then another one, further away, answering. And then silence, or nearly silence, the kind of silence that is made of small sounds layered together so gently that the effect is the same as quiet. You do not look at your phone. You simply lie there and let the morning arrange itself around you. Later, you dress in warm layers, because the mountain air will be colder higher up. You eat breakfast slowly in the hotel dining room, a wide window looking south toward the Eiger. There is bread, still warm, and butter, and a small jar of dark berry jam, and coffee that arrives in a white cup with a small square of chocolate on the saucer, because this is Switzerland, and even the coffee comes with chocolate. You eat without hurrying. The mountains are lit this morning in full sunlight, the Eiger's upper ridges bright with it, the glaciers glowing a soft pale blue. A cloud is moving slowly across the flank of the Wetterhorn, thinning and thickening as it goes, catching in the rock and then releasing, like something breathing very slowly. You watch it while you drink your coffee. You watch it while you finish your bread. And then, very gently, the morning begins. The gondola station is at the eastern edge of the village. You walk there slowly, along a path that runs beside a meadow, still wet with dew. The long grass catching the light, each blade tipped with silver. The sound of your footsteps on the path is soft and regular. The mountains are ahead of you, closer now than they seem from the hotel window, so large that you have to tilt your head back to find their summits. The gondola is a 6-person cabin, smooth and modern, moving silently out from the station on a thick steel cable that rises in a long, elegant curve up the face of the mountain. You step inside, the doors close softly, and then you are moving. The ascent is slow at first, passing over the low meadows at the edge of the village, the rooftops of the chalets below you, the flower boxes visible from above, small rectangles of red and pink against the dark wood. Then the meadows steepen and the trees begin, a long, dense forest of dark pine that the cable passes over without entering, the treetops close enough that you could almost reach out and touch them. You sit quietly in the cabin and look out. The village is below you now, spread along the valley floor, like something placed there carefully by hand, each building small and particular and perfectly itself. The church spire stands above the rest. A thin line of smoke rises from one chimney, bending slowly in the morning air. The cable car rises through 2 intermediate stations, Bort first, then Schreckfeld, each one a brief pause, a soft bump and stop, the doors opening to let in a breath of colder air before closing again and continuing upward. At Bort, the trees are already behind you. The landscape is open into high alpine meadow. The grass, shorter and tougher here, scattered with wild flowers, yellow and white and pale purple, very small, very bright against the green. At Schreckfeld, the meadows begin to give way to rock. The air coming through the small ventilation slot in the window is cold now, genuinely cold, carrying the clean, sharp smell of altitude and the faint metallic note of the cable itself as it hums above your head, pulling you steadily higher. The mountains are changing around you. What was once the skyline is now beside you. The Wetterhorn, which this morning looked like a distant thing at the end of the valley, is now close enough that you can see the texture of its face, the grey and silver layers of ancient limestone, the long diagonal lines where the rock was folded and compressed hundreds of millions of years ago, when the Alps were still being pushed up from the floor of a shallow sea. You think about that for a moment, the floor of a sea. Where you are sitting now in this quiet cabin floating above the valley was once the bottom of the ocean, and the creatures that live there, the small soft things, those shapes are still there. A record of something that happened so long ago that it is beyond the reach of any imagination that deals in ordinary time. And then the cabin crests the final ridge and the doors open and you step out onto the first plateau at 2,168 meters above sea level. And the world opens around you in every direction. And you stop. You simply stop. Because the view from up here is not something you can keep walking toward. It is something you have to stand inside. To the south, the full line of the Jungfrau Massif is laid out before you. The Eiger, the Mönch, the Jungfrau, one after another, each one enormous, each one draped in its own particular arrangement of ice and shadow, each one doing the thing that mountains do in the presence of someone small and quiet, which is to make that person feel, not diminished exactly, but appropriately sized. The valley is far below. You can see the whole of it from here. The long green corridor running from the mountains to the lower lakes, the scattered villages, the threads of road and river, the tiny dark shapes of cattle on the meadows. Above you, the sky is a deep, clear blue, the kind of blue that only exists above a certain altitude, where the atmosphere is thin enough that the light scatters differently, and the sky becomes less a colour and more a quality of openness, of space. You stand there for a long time. There is wind up here, not strong but constant, moving across the plateau from the south, from the direction of the glaciers, carrying their cold with it, and you pull your jacket a little closer and tilt your face up into it and let it move across your skin. Cold, clean, real. The part of the lake begins just east of the gondola station, and it is a gentle path, wide and well made, winding across the high plateau through a landscape that is both spare and full. Spare because there are no trees up here, no hedges, no walls, just the open alpine ground, the huge sky, the mountains. Full because everywhere you look, the detail is extraordinary. The path passes through patches of turf scattered with alpine flowers, and if you stop and look down, really stop and look down, you see that the ground is a whole miniature world. Yellow tormentil, no bigger than a fingernail. Pale blue harebells, their stems fine as thread, trembling in the mountain breeze. Cushions of moss, campion, deep green and pink, pressed close to the rock as if sheltering from the altitude. You stop and look down. You look for a long time. There is something deeply calming about looking at very small things in the middle of a very large landscape. The scale reversal is soothing. The tiny flowers do not know they are small. They are simply being exactly what they are, in exactly the place they have chosen to be. In no hurry at all. You continue walking. The path winds between pale granite boulders rounded by ancient ice, softened on their northern faces by grey-green lichen that has been growing there, very slowly, for longer than you can comfortably imagine. A marmot sits on one of the boulders, perfectly still, watching you approach with bright, deeply unimpressed eyes. You stop. The marmot considers you. You consider the marmot. Neither of you moves for a moment. Then the marmot, having apparently decided you are neither interesting nor threatening, turns and disappears into a crack between the rocks with a quick, liquid movement and is gone. You smile. You walk on. The lake appears without warning. The path crests a small rise, and there it is, Barchalpsee. sitting in a shallow bowl of the high plateau, perfectly still, perfectly blue, reflecting the sky and the mountains with an accuracy that seems somehow more than reflection, more than physics, as if the lake has made a deliberate choice to be a mirror, and has made that choice very well. The locals call it the Blue Jewel of the Alps. You understand why? Standing here in the thin mountain air, looking at the Schreckhorn and the Finsteraarhorn rising behind the far shore of the lake, their reflections laid in the water below them, inverted and exact, every detail preserved, every glacier and ridge and shadow reproduced in the blue-grey surface. You find a rock near the water's edge and sit down. The rock is smooth and slightly warm on its upper surface from the morning sun. You pull your knees up and rest your arms on them and look out at the lake. The water is very still. A small breath of wind crosses its surface from the north, and the reflections shiver and dissolve for a moment, breaking the mountains into a thousand flickering pieces of light. And then the wind passes, and the water stills again, and the mountains reassemble themselves in the lake, patient and exact, exactly as they were before. You watch this happen, and then you watch it happen again. The wind comes, and the mountains break apart. The wind passes, and the mountains come back together. There is something in that rhythm that the part of you beneath thought recognizes and responds to. The way things come apart and come back together, the way nothing stays broken, the way the water always eventually returns to stillness. You sit by the lake for a long time. You are not thinking about very much. A high bird, very small, very far away, crosses the sky above the far peaks, its wings barely moving, riding something invisible, rising slowly in a wide, unhurried spiral until it is too small to see. You watch until it disappears. Then you look back at the water. The mountains are still there. Later, you walk the cliff path. It begins at the edge of the gondola station and extends outward from the mountain face on a narrow walkway of grey metal, bolted directly to the rock, cantilevered out over the valley, so that the drop beneath your feet is very long and very real. You hold the single steel cable with one hand. Not out of fear exactly, more out of respect. The mountain deserves respect. The drop deserves acknowledgement. You walk slowly, one step at a time, and with each step, the view to the south opens a little further, the mountains revealing more of themselves, the Eiger filling more of the sky to your left, the valley falling further away beneath your feet. At the suspension bridge you stop. The bridge is 40 meters long, a single rope suspension of wooden slats and wire spanning a gap in the cliff face, and it moves very slightly, very gently, a slow sway as you step onto it, a slow accommodation to your weight. You stand at the center of the bridge and look south. The full massif is before you, the Eiger, the Mönch, the Jungfrau, one after another, filling the horizon from east to west, 3.5 to nearly 4,000 meters each, coated in ice on their upper flanks, the glaciers hanging between them like long, slow rivers that have been frozen in mid-motion for centuries. The wind moves across the bridge. The bridge moves with it, barely, a gentle, almost imperceptible sway, and you stand at its center and feel that sway. And feel the height beneath you, and feel the cold wind on your face, and you are entirely, entirely present. There is nothing in your head except this: the mountains, the wind, the light, the slow sway of the bridge. and then, very quietly, you begin walking back. The descent from the mountain is different from the ascent. You take the trotty bike because someone has recommended it and because it sounds exactly like the sort of thing you should do once here in this place on this afternoon. A trotty bike is, in essence, a large scooter, a wide platform with a low handlebar, two bicycle wheels, a simple lever brake on each side, and a design philosophy that assumes the person using it is happy to travel at a speed that is faster than walking, but slower than anything that might cause genuine alarm. You collect it at the middle station, board, after a single stop on the gondola down from first. The path from board to the village is 2.5 kilometres of winding, paved track through the high meadows, and it descends at a gradient that is, in most places, gentle. You step onto the platform, you push off, and then you are rolling. The wheels hum on the warm tarmac. The meadows open around you on either side, the grass long and pale in the afternoon light, dotted with the blue and yellow of late summer wildflowers. The village is visible below you, small and particular, and right where you left it. The church spire standing above the rooftops, the eiger behind it unchanged. The path bends gently to the left, following the contour of the hillside, and for a moment the view opens to the east, to the Wetterhorn, and the long white reach of the upper snow fields that catch the afternoon sun and hold it, glowing with a steady, sourceless light. You are not going fast. That is the point, perhaps. On the way up, the gondola did the work while you sat and watched. On the way down, you are doing the work, but gently, slowly, with the brakes in your hands and the wind in your face and the warm smell of summer meadow rising around you. You pass a farmhouse close to the path. There is a washing line strung between two posts in the garden, and on it, shirts and trousers and a child's small yellow dress moving in the warm updraft from the valley, lifting and falling and lifting again. A woman in the garden looks up as you pass. You raise one hand, she raises hers, and then the path bends again, and the farmhouse is behind you, and you are moving through the long meadow above the village, the sound of cowbells drifting up from somewhere below, the shadow of the afternoon starting to pool in the lower valley. The wheels hum, the mountains stand. You arrive at the edge of the village without having noticed yourself arriving, and you slow to a stop, and you stand there on the path in the long afternoon light, and you feel exactly as you should feel at the end of a day on a mountain, tired, satisfied, utterly and completely present. The spa is below the hotel. You find it in the early evening, when the light on the eiger has turned from gold to a deep, warm copper, the last of the day sitting on the high ridge lines, while the valley below fills slowly with blue. The spa is a quiet place of stone and warm cedar, soft lighting, the sound of water, the smell of something clean and faintly botanical. There are few people here. The hour is gentle. You change slowly, without hurrying, without thinking about very much. The outdoor pool is smaller than you imagined. It sits on an upper terrace, open to the south, and the view from it is directly toward the mountains. You lower yourself in. The water is warm, precisely warm, not hot enough to be overwhelming, just warm enough to feel like something the body has been waiting for all day. It wraps around you slowly as you descend the steps, and by the time you are shoulder deep, you have stopped thinking about temperature at all. You stand there, looking south. The Eiger is silhouetted now against a sky of deep indigo and amber, its outline clean and very still. The last light, catching the ice on its upper face, in long threads of rose and copper that are already fading even as you watch them. The colours deepening toward grey. The mountain becoming more itself as the light leaves it darker and larger and more simply present. You float on your back. You look straight up. The sky above you is the colour of the inside of a mussel shell, pale pink and grey blue at the western edge, deepening to a clear, luminous ink at the zenith, and the first star is already there, one small, steady point of light in the darkening overhead. You float, you breathe, the warm water holds you, the mountain watches over the valley, the star above you does not move, you are not thinking, there is nothing to think. Dinner is a quiet thing. A table by the window. The mountains now dark shapes against a sky in which several stars have appeared. A candle on the table. Very small. Very still. You eat rösti, which is a Swiss thing. A great golden disc of shredded potato pressed and fried in butter until it is crisp and bronze on its outside and soft and yielding within. Served with a fried egg whose yolk is warm and orange, and a bowl of raclette cheese poured over at the table from a small copper pan, slow and generous and perfect. There is bread, fresh and dense. There is a small glass of wine, pale and dry. You eat slowly. The restaurant is warm, the light low. The sound of other diners, a soft, indistinct murmur, like the sound of a river heard from inside a building. You are not part of any of it, and that is fine. You are simply in it, the way you are in a warm room, not thinking about being in the room, just being there. You look at the mountains out the window. They are darker now than they were. The sky behind them has gone almost fully dark, and the mountains are black shapes, familiar and immovable, unchanged by the fact of nightfall, unchanged by the fact of your dinner, unchanged by anything. They will be there in the morning. They will be there long after the morning. That thought, which might in another context feel daunting or strange, feels here. At this table, in this warmth, tonight, like the most restful thing in the world. You walk back through the village very slowly. The street is quiet now, the light low and amber in the shop windows, most of the visitors already inside for the evening. The only sounds, the soft rush of a small stream somewhere behind the buildings and far down the valley. The very faint sound of a bell, one single tone, lasting long after the striking, fading so gradually that you cannot find the moment it stops. The air is colder. You pull your jacket tighter and look up. The stars are out now, fully out, a display that is only possible this far from any city, this high and clean air. Not the handful of stars you might see from a town, but a sky thick with them, the Milky Way a pale smear across the zenith. The individual stars too numerous to count or name, just a field of light, ancient and indifferent, and extraordinarily beautiful. You stop in the middle of the quiet street and look up at it. Nobody passes. The stream sounds. The stars are still. Your room is warm and dark. You have left the window cracked again, as you did last night, as you will leave it every night you are here, because the night air of this valley is something you want near you while you sleep. It comes in softly now, cold and clean and carrying the night, pine, rock, the very faint mineral note of the glacier exhaling. You sit on the edge of the bed for a moment, not thinking about anything in particular, just sitting. The duvet is thick and cool on its upper surface, and when you pull it back and slide underneath, it settles around you with the exact weight and warmth that your body has been waiting for since you got up this morning. You adjust the pillow. You close your eyes. In the dark behind your eyes, the day arranges itself gently, not in order, not as a list of things happened, just as light and sensation drifting. The blue of the lake, impossibly still, the mountains in the water, inverted and exact, the weight of the gondola cabin rising through the morning air. The meadows below, small and green and perfectly arranged. The trotty bike on the warm tarmac, wheels humming. The long meadow on either side, the valley opening below. The warm water of the pool holding your body while the mountains went dark above the valley. The single star appearing in the pale evening sky. These things drift through, one after another, soft and slow, like clouds moving across a high meadow, each one present for a moment and then easing past, making room for the next. The cowbell sounds once in the dark, below the window, far away, unhurried. A sound that has been sounding in this valley for centuries, in just this tone, at just this hour, across all those evenings that you are not here for, and this one that you are. You breathe in and out. The Eiger stands over the valley in the dark. 3,967 meters of ancient limestone, each layer the floor of a sea that no longer exists. Each layer older than anything you could hold in your mind as real. It is standing there now in the dark without you. It does not need you to see it. It does not need anything. It simply stands. And you are small and warm and here and perfectly fine. The duvet is exactly the right weight. The pillow is cool against your cheek. The valley breathes. The village is quiet. The stream below the buildings makes its small constant sound, a sound that has no beginning and no end, just a continuation, just the water moving over the stones in the only direction water ever moves. And now, as everything grows quieter, and the mountains settle deeper into the dark, and your thoughts begin to soften at their edges, you can stay here, in this valley, in this warm room, or drift somewhere deeper still, knowing that the Eiger is standing over you, knowing that the stars are there above the valley, knowing that the stream is still moving, and the flowers on the window boxes are closed for the night, and the meadows are still, and the lake is still, and everything is exactly as it should be.